Hi, I'm Bill Arnold with George Fraser.
Hi, Bill.
Thanks for checking out this podcast, A Real Recovery. You can hear the show live Sundays at 5 p.m. This, as well as many other podcasts, are available to listen to while you take a walk or do whatever you want to do. The address is myfaithradio.com. Thanks for listening.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to what will soon be another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. We're so glad you joined us tonight. Whether it was on purpose or by accident, either way, we're happy to take it. We're glad you're with us. George Fraser across the board from me. How are you, George?
I'm good, Bill. How are you?
Well, I'm trying to talk too fast this morning.
I heard you on earlier.
Yeah. And we have Alex on the board. Alex, how are you?
I'm really good.
Excellent. We've got a very interesting show tonight, one I've been looking forward to for a while. We have Andrew Doan on. He is an MD and a PhD, and he's written a book called Hooked on Games, and it's about the lure and cost of video game and internet addiction. He talks about it almost being like digital heroin, George.
Okay.
And so we're going to get some insights as to what goes on in the mind of gamers, and I think we can back this whole thing up and say it all can start down with something as simple as the fact I look at my smartphone 120 times a day.
Yes,
I mean,
you do.
It's not the same as being involved with gaming, but however, we spend a lot of time looking at screens. And, you know, for a little bit of how this works, you do it, then it does you.
Right. Kind of works for a while. And getting back to what this show's about, Real Recovery is about that we think all Christians are in recovery. Your life should be different from when you first met Christ. And we look at a step every week, and today it's step one where we admit we're powerless over drugs, alcohol, our lives are unmanageable. But, Bill, we're powerless over everything. Our next breath comes at the mercy of an all-sovereign God, and we need to recognize if I like something, there's a chance I might like it too much. We're not just talking about recovery from drugs and alcohol. We're talking about anything that's an idol for us. We believe addiction is idolatry, so recovery without Jesus Christ is still idolatry. And last week, we talked about codependent people that are hooked on pleasing other people.
Mm-hmm.
And today we're going to look at gaming. And I think anything that gets us away from God, a God substitute, can become an addiction.
And George, talk a little bit about what happens when any activity just starts becoming a disruption in your life.
Well, I think anything we can look forward to too much, think about, fantasize, wish I was doing it when I'm not doing it, when I get done doing it, when can I do it again?
Mm-hmm.
As a recovering person, I have to look at everything. Moderation isn't really my strong suit.
No, you have no off switch, do you?
No, I don't.
Nah, that's a problem.
You know, we're not playing golf today. We're, you know, it's only five times a week. But, yeah, and I think anything that draws us away that we worship, including ourselves, can become a real problem.
I agree. And let's talk a little bit about step one. And then we'll move on and bring our guest on.
Well, we get to a point where we admit we are powerless. And this happens in a lot of areas of our life. But we have that moment of mental clarity where we realize we need help. And it's the gift of desperation. Am I willing to do whatever it takes to change where I'm at? That usually comes with a crisis. I'm losing something. I might have a life area problem, a maladaptive behavior pattern in my relationships, at work, whatever, that causes a crash.
Mm-hmm. And there, once again, the wisdom of George P. Fraser, a guy with a master's degree in chemical dependency counseling, and I do not have a degree.
And a high school degree in life.
Yeah.
I kind of like that.
And a PhD in pain.
Pain.
Yeah. Well, anyway, our guest today is very serious about spreading this message because he knows the downside to gaming addiction. And he knows, I mean, George, I be around my family and I look at my little nephews and they're on a screen. They're playing a game. And I think, how serious could this get? Well, I think the answer is very serious. So welcome to the program, Dr. Andrew Doan. How are you, Dr. Doan?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me today.
Oh, yeah. Your book is absolutely fascinating. And I would love for you to share a little bit with our listeners just your background and how you got even to the United States, because it's a fascinating story.
Yeah, it's awesome that there were so many people to help us because we were Vietnamese refugees. My parents were fortunately had enough money to bribe our way out of Vietnam, and we left to follow Saigon, and I was about 4 years old. And then the U.S. military set up a camp in Southern California, and it was there to house the first 50,000 Vietnamese into the country. And then a church in Aberdeen, South Dakota actually sponsored us and our family. So they gave us the clothing and the means to have a house. And from there on, we were able to enter the country as refugees.
And even though you had a house in South Dakota, you still had some issues about being in that house. I read in your book that your parents weren't very good about keeping the heat up
That's right.
All kinds of stuff.
Being from a tropical country, no one taught us how to turn on the heat during the winter.
Yeah, that's not a problem. That's not a problem in the upper Midwest.
I've been in the upper Midwest. It's very cold. And so my parents were burning coals, actually, in the house. And we all got carbon monoxide poisoning our first winter there.
Uh-huh. So you're an Asian family in South Dakota. You didn't have a lot of neighbors who were Asians, am I right?
No, not at all.
Okay. So as a kid, were you feeling a little bit isolated or a little bit not part of the team? Or what were your feelings as a kid?
Absolutely. You know, I was being in 1975, early 1980s, being Asian was not popular at the time because of the Vietnam War and the whole stigma associated coming from Southeast Asia. And so we were always looked upon as different. Some people, you know, treated us as special, but that meant, like, you know, looking at us and treating us differently. And so I felt really insecure as a kid. And I grew up in mainly all white neighborhoods. And it was tough. It was tough to assimilate into the American culture. And it was difficult to deal with. And I think that's probably, you know, the stress that I've never learned how to deal with, and that insecurity. And my parents were Buddhists. And so we didn't know Christ at the time, even though a Christian church, you know, sponsored us. We weren't Christians. And so for me, without having Christ in my life, I think that insecurity really was a lack of foundation for me to how to handle stress in life. And so it was difficult. And I think that was probably the beginning of my priming the pump for addictive behaviors.
Mm-hmm. How did you plug in with people? We need a sense of community. And here you are from the outside. How did you plug in with guys in school?
You know, I try to be like them. So I hung out with the jocks. And so I started playing baseball. And then when I started playing baseball, I worked really hard. You know, like, for example, I had this coach, his name is Coach Bob. And Bob was amazing. He was like my Caucasian father, you know, or my Caucasian version of my father. And he really took me under his wing. And so I would go home, for example, and learn how to do the pop-up slide. And I would do it so much there where I get holes in my jeans, and I come back and I was the number one, you know, base dealer on the team. But however, the kids will see that, and you know how kids get jealous, or maybe, you know, there's too much attention that the coach gave to me because I was special again, right? I was a different kid. He'd never had this immigrant kid that he can guide and help. And so they started making fun of me. So when I would get down into position of shortstop or out in the infield, they would all say, "Ah, Rice Tikka, did you eat your rice today?" Or they call me Rice Teddy. And all these different names. And so, you know, I'd laugh along and try to be part of the guys. But, you know, that really can hurt someone's ego, you know, over time. And the worst thing is that my dad, was trying to, you know, be supportive too. But he would bring these pie pans along during the baseball games. And the opposing team that we would play against would have these little cowbells or, you know, these little noisemakers that they would make. And so he decided to get pie pans because, of course, he's trying to be frugal and trying to find what he can use in the house that he didn't have to spend any money to buy these little cowbells or whatever. And he would get up on the bench and he would clang these pie pans together, and it would go clang, 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 and he's standing straight up and he'd be like, "Number one base runner, you can do it." And, you know, and at the time I was really like embarrassed when I get on base. But now looking back, I can see that, you know, my dad truly loved me and just wanted the best for me. But at the time, when you're a young kid, that wasn't helpful in building someone's self-esteem.
That's for sure. We're talking to Dr. Andrew Doan, and he has written a book called Hooked on Games, The Lure and Cost of Video Game and Internet Addiction. And he has got quite a journey himself into the gaming, playing almost over 20,000 hours of games over a nine-year period. And then he got out of the addiction, and we'll hear more of the story. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk to Dr. Doan about his journey. You're listening to Real Recovery with Bill Arnold and George Fraser. Alex on the board. Be back in a minute. Welcome back to Real Recovery. Bill Arnold, George Fraser, Alex on the board tonight. We've got a fascinating guest with us tonight, Dr. Andrew Doan. He's written a book on video addiction, internet addiction, and I think it's something that all of us can be a little bit susceptible to, wasting time on the internet. I was looking at Ephesians chapter 5 this morning, and it says, "Look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time, because the days are evil." And I, you know, it's wonder how much, what are we doing about making the best use of our time? And video games can be a waste of time. Am I right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, I'm so glad you brought that passage.
Well, it's, I think we're all accountable as to how we spend our time, and it's certainly good to have recreation, but when something becomes disruptive, then you've got to look at it a second time. And in your book, you talked about, you know, starting as a kid and getting just over the top involved. And then you took a break for a while. And then when the video games got a little bit more sophisticated as an adult, you just went wild, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when I was younger, my parents primed the pump because it was healthier to be at home rather than running around, you know, the neighborhood all the time. So they would, you know, coach me on stay away from drugs and alcohol, but here's the Atari, here's the Commodore 64. But it was not until the sophistication of the game, as you mentioned, that really sucked me in.
And the graphics have gotten just so unbelievable, and there's so much allure, isn't there?
Yeah, and it's not really the graphics, because there's a game now called Minecraft, which parents would look at and say, these graphics are kind of, you know, rudimentary, right? Basic blocks.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Nick Yee out of Stanford showed that the three elements that make gaming super attractive is the achievement, the immersion, and also the social connections that the game can afford. So really, it's the internet connectivity and the multiplayer play that made gaming like on steroids. So now you can have a game that even has, like, not even advanced graphics can really suck a person in. And now they have all these, like, online friends that are giving them peer pressure to play.
Hmm. I want to go back a little bit, because we went from playing baseball in school, and you started, I'm assuming, playing some video games back then. But you had to get some pretty good grades to get where you are. So could we follow up on that journey?
Sure. You know, I've always been blessed. And, it's amazing how the Lord is using me. And so back then, when I even was an atheist, he blessed me with a near photographic memory. So school was actually quite easy for me. And I just knew that if I worked hard, I'd get a job. And my goal, my purpose in life was to get a great job and just to show everyone I can do it, you know, just to have, you know, to become a doctor or a lawyer, just like my parents guided me along to do. So I was able to do really well in school and still play a ton of games, you know, and then I had 6 full ride scholarships to medical school. And then that really didn't help me, because that just made me cockier and more arrogant. And during med school, I didn't have to study that hard to maintain a B average to get my medical career or my medical degree. And therefore I could play all night long and do whatever I wanted, you know, and not study much.
You know, George, I thought I was going to like Andy, and I'm changing my mind.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah, I think this interview is over.
You know, well, we should tie into the arrogant part, although he has some talent, you know.
I know.
That's the difference.
That's the huge difference, is he's got talent. So you are just confronted with all kinds of opportunity, and you feel like you're just in control of everything and in top of the heap here, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, and why wouldn't he be? He's got a lot of success, and maybe, you know, rules are for other people. I can do this and do my gaming on the side.
And he did?
Yeah. And there's no real pushback on that, because he's getting the grades.
Yeah, and the bad thing is, you know, like I said, I was without Christ during that episode of 10 years. I mean, I played 50 to 100 hours of gaming over 10 years, and I would only sleep 2-3 hours a night. And being sleep deprived, I even got more cockier, more angry. I made fun of the other students in my mind. I was jeering at them, saying, you know, I'm on full ride scholarship. They must be really stupid. I started to be condescending to my wife and really emotionally abusive towards her. She eventually slapped a restraining order on me, you know. And so, yeah, when you place your value in the secular accolades like that, and boy, it was ugly. Things got ugly really fast.
So you're leading kind of separate lives in a way, aren't you? I mean, aren't you? She's accommodating your gaming addiction?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, for example, I was in the research lab and my research is not going so well. So I would then sneak down to the library and hack into the computer and get a boot disk. And so that way I can get my games, Warcraft 2, which is a real-time strategy game, onto the Johns Hopkins Medical Institution library computers. Okay. And I would be playing, you know, Warcraft for three hours a day. You take a lunch break, but it turned into three. And here I am supposed to be doing my graduate work, and I'm playing games instead.
So you got a little bit of criminal mind in you too, don't you? Hacking into computers to play your video games.
Well, here's the thing, and I love the fact that you brought into, you know, these scriptural passage about how we spend our time and where we should invest our minds and you know, are we always focusing on the Lord and the scriptures? Because what happens, these games, I play these role-playing games where I was a thief and I would be able to hack into, you know, the bank or kill the bank teller and get the money or, you know, basically, you know, murder the town and steal all their items. And that was the game Ultima and Ultima Online, for example. And so that when you're playing that enough, your thoughts actually transfer into real life. So it's exactly what Christ taught in Matthew, that if you thought lustfully towards another woman, you've already committed adultery. Mm-hmm. So I've lived it. I've lived this whole evil mindset in these games and where I could not separate that from real life eventually because I was sleep deprived. I didn't have the, you know, resilience or the, you know, the mental power to hold back and hide it anymore. And so pretty soon I was treating my wife like how I treated the other enemy gamers online, which is full of profanity and condescension and, you know, and belittling and bullying and all these other stuff.
Sounds pretty manic. Is this an adrenaline lift for you to do this, or what's the physiological deal? If I'm sleep deprived and I like the action of the game, sounds like an adrenaline junkie to me.
Absolutely. So all addictive behaviors are driven through that mechanism. So adrenaline is being controlled by the adrenals, but the adrenals are controlled by the brain through the hypothalamus pituitary adrenal axis. Okay. And so there's two axes here. There's the hypothalamus pituitary adrenal axis, which is the HPA. And there's also the hypothalamus pituitary gonadal axis, which is the HPG. And so what's interesting about this, I was also addicted to internet porn. But in the book, I wanted to just talk about the gaming aspect because I just wanted to focus on that. But internet porn runs hand in hand with internet gaming because the mind wants variety. The mind wants adrenaline, right, for the body. And so, for example, a drug addict who takes methamphetamine, it also drives the HPA axis or the pathway for adrenaline rush. Cocaine is the same thing. So all these drugs are actually acting on the mind through the receptor level. But through a behavior addiction, it acts with the visual cortex. And so the visual cortex, your visual stimuli, stimulates your entire body to secrete adrenaline. And we know this by medical research. We know that games that have immersive sound, for example, embedded in the gameplay, cortisol level and adrenaline is increased. We know that the blood pressure of gamers within 30 minutes of gameplay will shoot up to 180, 190 systolic over 140. Their pupils will dilate. Their heart rate goes up. They start sweating. And the gaming addict, if you talk to, you know, a gaming addict like even myself, I even get excited when I talk about the gameplay because my mind has been programmed for that. So when I wrote the book, Hooked on Games, and I was trying to recount how the gameplay should be, I got so excited. I actually went into full full-blown withdrawals because I shot my adrenaline and I literally had the jitters and I had the runs. I had all the symptoms of withdrawals, of true drug withdrawal addiction. And then I couldn't even sleep that night because I had the rigors without a fever. It was crazy. So I had the huge, biggest adrenaline rush I ever had. And then the next day I felt like completely wasted. And so I knew what was going on. So I had to like go out and take a walk and, you know, and basically just wait it through. And then it came back to normal over the weekend.
That is so fascinating.
It is great.
Yeah.
Thank you. I didn't understand all the physiology on it.
Well, I did.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you're not as bright, but go ahead.
You know, dumb it down for me. Bill obviously got it. But I know for me, I'm a recovering cocaine addict, and just you get high thinking about going to get it. And when you were talking about that, I could hear in your voice a little bit, the little intensity. It's still there. It's always there, isn't it? It's kind of an allure.
You know, in neuroscience, we have a couple sayings. Neurons that fire together wire together. Number one, garbage in, garbage stays. Because our brain encodes memories and experiences and thoughts through physical changes in our brain. So there's rewiring of our neurons. So therefore, there is a point in time when you think of something enough, it's there permanently in your brain. So the example I always give to people is imagine the most gruesome horror flick you've ever seen. You can't take that image out of your head, no matter how much you try. If you've been hurt physically or maybe sexually hurt or assaulted, you can't take those memories out of your mind. They are there permanently.
That is so true. Yeah, I'm thinking of the horror movie I saw like in eighth grade. It's the George Romero film, Night of the Living Dead. And I can still see scenes as graphically in my head today as I could in eighth grade. And, you know, it's just part of my brain now. I mean, it doesn't affect my life, but I do go to bed with...
Oh, I think it does. I think it was obviously very damaging to you.
Garlic around my neck at night. I sleep with that. But, you know, it's not affecting me in real life. But it sounds like the wiring can be pretty intense.
It can. And let me add one more thing about video games that's fascinating. So at Harvard University, they did a research study called looking at Tetris and how the game Tetris can imprint in people's minds. And what they found was that when people played excessive Tetris, like 7 hours a day, they had invasive memories of these blocks, these puzzle blocks, while they sleep. So while you sleep is when you actually form a lot of your memory. Your brain's very active when you sleep. So what happens is these children and, you know, adults or any gamer who plays these games, they got to be very careful on the content they're playing on, because if they play that content enough, they are dreaming about that content. Similar to the drug addict who's injecting all the time will dream about that activity. Or if you're looking at porn all the time, you dream about the porn. If you're committing adultery, you dream about adultery. Eventually your brain fills up with those memories in your sleep. So you got to be very careful what you expose your mind to, because literally, as you're sleeping, it is being formed like concrete and being cured like a concrete sidewalk. And you got to be careful what you put into that concrete mixture.
Garbage in, garbage out, Bill. We work with a lot of guys that are recovering cocaine addicts, and the pornography goes right in with that. And guys will tell me that they can remember what Miss September from 1990 looks like, but they can't remember what they did yesterday. Is that because the memory comes with a chemical reaction, an emotion, and it cements it in?
You guys should be neuroscientists. This is you have such great insight.
Don't encourage him, Andy. Do not encourage him.
I sold candy for a living before I got sober, so no. Medical school wasn't an option.
So let me share you with this one research study. This is not my research study, but this is a study out there that looked at porn and the influence of brain processing after looking at porn. What they found was that men who looked at pornography, within 20 minutes or 30 minutes, their math processing skills increased, actually, over men who didn't look at porn. Now, it's not that porn made you a better mathematician. What porn did was drove the chemicals associated with learning a memory. And through the adrenal gland, of course, you know, porn gets excited through the gonadal axis, so your testosterone goes up. But one of the chemicals that goes up is actually adrenaline and cortisol through the adrenal. Now, cortisol is fascinating. Cortisol is released along with adrenaline, but cortisol is a steroid, a glucocorticoid. It actually binds to DNA through a glucocorticoid receptor in neurons, and that helps activate memory. So essentially, if you get excited over something, you learn better, which makes sense.
Interesting. Andy, we're going to take a very short break, and we want to revisit that because that was too much for us to process.
I want to talk about that.
We have to talk about that. This is Real Recovery. Thanks for listening tonight. We'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back to Real Recovery. So glad you joined us tonight. We're talking to Dr. Andrew Doan, who has got quite the insights on internet addiction, video game addiction, and a number of other things. He's a MD and a PhD. And George, what do you got, a master's?
Just a master's.
Yeah. So there you go. We know who's in charge in this interview.
I got about a third of what he was talking about. But,
I got less than that.
It's great.
Yeah. George, you had a question for Andy.
Well, right, I do, and I don't want to get out of sequence here, but I was thinking about it. So a lot of times people, when they get into recovery, we go off of John 10:10 that Jesus came to give us life abundantly. There's kind of a replacement there, and I know for me the exercise component, I was a cocaine addict, but if I do aerobic exercise for an hour, I get a high off that, and it's a good substitute. Can you explain that to me medically, why that happens?
Absolutely. So remember how I mentioned the hypothalamus pituitary adrenal axis, the HPA. So as you exercise, you cause your body to go under stress. And under stress, there's good stress and there's bad stress, okay? Exercise is a good stressor. It actually stimulates a spike in adrenaline and cortisol. That helps your body to handle the exercise, but there's a resetting of that whole axis. So it goes up and then it goes down. And as you recover from that, your brain is reset, but those hormones there help you have clear thought. The cortisol, it feels good. It helps to restore the body, but you can't have prolonged cortisol because it actually damages the body long-term with long-term cortisol exposure. But drugs will do the same thing. And so people are getting the adrenaline rush, but they don't get that recovery period. So they use more and more, and the cortisol keeps on getting higher and higher, and they're also stressed out because they're using something illegal and they're having trouble at work. So the cortisol and the adrenaline never reset in those addicts typically.
Okay, so I'm a big fan of 12-step, the 12 steps and the psychology, but there's a physiological component that just doesn't seem to be addressed in most addicts. And I think that's why a lot of them go back, because they miss the feeling. Is that fair?
Absolutely. So you have to replace it. And for me, you know, all addictions are the same, because I've been so in tune with my addictive behavior and past, right? So I can get addicted to anger. Anger drives adrenaline, same thing as cocaine does and all these other drugs. I get addicted to business or work or email or texting, you know, anything, you know, that can deal with adrenaline drive. And so what you need to do is replace it. And what I've found a good replacement is really diving into the scriptures, having a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. He gives me this incredible dopamine rush. And for me, my dopamine rush now comes from looking at his miracles. Like I'll hear a testimony, and I just can't explain how that worked, or I see someone cured miraculously. It gives me such a dopamine rush. I can feel the tingles all over my body. And that is what I find sustainable for addicts, that if you go through a 12-step program and you finally find a real God, which a God that has power, who is, you know, we know is Jesus Christ, who actually can be in us through the Holy Spirit, can just basically give us those dopamine rushes, and it feels good. And I think that's why it says in the scriptures that, you know, the Holy Spirit will be given to us, and it'd be giving us freely, and it'd be overfilling. And through the Holy Spirit, we're getting dopamine rushes, I believe.
I love that. Bill, one of the things in the 12-step movement is that intensive work with other addicts is the best way to not use. And a lot of people think if they're around that, that'll show them how bad it is. They don't want to go back. But I think what it is, there's no greater high than seeing somebody get sober and get saved. It's how we're wired. And so the God substitute of the coke or the pornography or the gaming is a substitute. And when you drop that and you actually get involved in working with other people, as we do, that is the biggest high there is. I hear exactly what you're saying. I think that's what we're wired to do.
Amen, and I agree with that. And you know what? Let me straight describe you something here. See, I became born again about age 34, and being a neuroscientist, it was the weirdest thing. I actually was able to dissect down what was happening in my mind when I was being born again. So a lot of born-again Christians are being accused of being, like, bipolar because they look sad and they look happy. Have you ever seen anybody, like, you know, born again? They're sad because they are repenting of all their past sins. Because literally, when you realize there's a real God and he knows everything you did, all your sins, remember the memories that we talked about? You remember everything to the last sin that you did, you know, when you were a little kid. And you're, like, totally repenting within, like, a period of minutes. And so there's this huge grief, but then there's a happy moment where you realize you're forgiven by this amazing grace that God has given you and loves you. And so at that point, people are switching back from crying to laughter, crying, laughter, crying. That is huge dopamine rush to feel like you're forgiven. You know, and when you are helping other people recover and you see that and you relive that in yourself, that is what I feel, that rush all the time in the church.
That's fascinating. Andy, I have a question because we're on the dopamine issue. And I sometimes wonder if all the artificial stimulation by video games and internet issues is somehow suppressing natural dopamine where you can see a beautiful sunset and you go, boring. I'd like to get back to video games. There's no dopamine rush where there should be naturally. So what happens to the dopamine in your brain? I always think when you seek artificial dopamine, I always think it's the dope in me that's trying to get a high artificially.
Absolutely. So what happens is your brain develops tolerance. And so when you all dopamine rushes are healthy because it has to be done in moderation, right? Because sugar, for example, is a healthy dopamine rush. I mean, if we didn't have our craving for sugar, we wouldn't go out for high caloric foods when we were hunters and gatherers.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, honey, for example, would be a source of sugar that would be healthy. So dopamine rushes are actually, you know, supposed to be healthy. It's only when we abuse it with artificial means of delivery, meaning that there's no rest period between those events. When there's little rest period between the events of dopamine rushes, the brain actually turns off that system slowly. So it's called tolerance and the dampening. So you remember the HPA axis that I talked about, the adrenal gland? The dopamine system is turned down in the brain, but the HPA system is also down-regulated too. So you need more and more and more of the same substance or behavior to turn on brain dopamine as well as adrenaline. And what's amazing about this is that what you describe is Proverbs 27:7, I believe, where it says that a man who is hungry, even honey on the comb is bitter. But to a man who – I'm sorry, to a man who is full, even honey on the comb is bitter. But to a man who is hungry, even bitter is sweet. And so what's amazing about this is that when I read the scriptures, that's when my knowledge of neuroscience just exploded and human behavior understanding exploded because I'm like – wow, the God of the universe encoded, not even encoded, just blatantly said it right there in 27:7 and described tolerance.
Well, we see it. It's evidence. I got to keep doing more and more, and I get less and less. But when I wire myself to Jesus that I was created to, it doesn't run out. And as an addict doctor, I was always aware that the drug I was doing was running out, but in my walk with Jesus, it gets deeper and more, and it's not minimizing, it's increasing.
Absolutely. And so another way I describe this is that, you know, each brain area, we don't really understand fully how the brain works, but the brain, you know, we only use like 10 to 15% of our brain, something like that, but we take up like 25% of the blood flow of our body goes to our brain. So our brain has huge capacity. So each area of the brain is assigned certain memories, right? So the way I describe it is that when you use a drug of choice, you abuse that one area of the brain, you develop tolerance. And so you have to do so much of that activity now that it actually hurts other activities in your life. But when you follow the Lord, he gives you like 1,000 brain areas of different dopamine rushes. Like, you know, you can serve the, you know, the women's group at your church, and then you can work in youth group, and you can then, you know, build houses in Mexico, or you can actually collect shoes and work with, you know, an organization to put shoes in Haiti on little children. You know, you can, there's so many things you can do that's different that literally your whole time and your whole life can be sustainable dopamine rush of the Lord without developing that tolerance.
Yeah, you didn't mention sitting at home watching hockey, but that's okay.
Well, I do a month-long trip to Arizona every January to help my golfing buddies. You know, that's a dopamine rush for me.
Yeah, right. So, Andy, give us a tell our audience what your turning point was. Obviously, you were addicted on games, and you had a kind of a rage thing going at home. You had had this monster thing happening with how you were treating your wife and what was going on. And then you had a turning point that said, uh-oh, I need to be different. Can you just describe what that was like and how that happened?
First, it was a very difficult road for me because I'm plagued by arrogance and atheism at the time. And so my wife slapped a restraining order on me in 2000, okay, and around 2000. And so she left with our kids who were like 2 and 1 at the time. So that was a wake-up call. But then she sends me a book on how to win your wife back before it's too late, and it's a Christian book. And so I'm like, wow, you know, I really want to learn how to do this. So let's try to master this. So I try to master winning my wife back. But I approach it with the goal of winning her back because we had kids and you know, we need to repair this marriage. But I remember that night when she left, I was literally ready to commit suicide, and I was planning my suicide. And I just kind of prayed out there and I said, you know, God, if you are out there, please fix what I broke. And I'm crying and I'm just broken. And I said, if you fix this, I will promise to serve you for the rest of my life. And that was my promise. But it was not immediate. So my wife sends me this book, like, you know, 4 months later, I read it on the plane into trying to finalize our divorce. So she moved back to Oregon. I'm in Baltimore. We're separated 3,500 miles away. We spent $20,000 in divorce fees already. So I'm reading this book over the plane, and we somehow reconciled when I was in Oregon trying to finalize our divorce papers. So she decides not to go through the divorce, moves back in with us, with me and the kids in Baltimore. And then she says, we need to go to church. And I'm like, okay, we'll go to church. But I would be playing games all night because I didn't accept the fact that video game addiction was real. So I'd still try to moderate it. And I just, you know, kind of made excuses for my anger or my profanity and my belittling. But that didn't work very long. You know, the moderation doesn't work. And so what happened was my old habits started to come back. And I would sleep through church and she would elbow me and I'd wake up and then having this like near photographic memory, these little scriptures would stick in my head, right? So then pretty soon over the next 4 years, I finally was brought down to my knees and realized that, you know, my wife became saved. I saw a change in her. And then the day that I realized that God was real, I had this huge, you know, born again experience. But it didn't end there because there's a scripture in I don't know the address specifically, but, you know, the Lord rebukes those he loves, right? So now, 9th year into my addiction, the year that I became saved, literally all these physical ailments from my gaming hit me. I mean, just whammo. So I had this carpal tunnel that just got so bad where I couldn't write my medical charts anymore during my residency training. And then I couldn't do surgery as well because I had this carpal tunnel that extended from my right index finger all the way up to my right forearm. And then my cortisol level was all out of whack. So I had this arm infection from my armpit from being, you know, lack of hygiene and all this other stuff, and it's streaking down my right arm. And then I had these massive hemorrhoids from high blood pressure and sitting all the time on the, you know, in my chair and lack of exercise, and they were just, you know, painful and just, you know, and I just like, my body's breaking down. Finally, I realized, and it's like, aha, I'm an addict. And so even though, you know, I almost lost my family, that didn't really wake me up that I was an addict, it was literally the Lord putting all these physical ailments on me. And I said, you know what? I'm killing my medical career because of my addiction. And that at that point, that's when I went cold turkey. But I was a mess at that point, you know, trying to recover at that point.
That's quite a vulnerable story you're sharing. So we're going to just have one more segment with you coming up, but we're going to take a really short break and hear more about what God has been doing in your life since, because I know you've been being used in a big way. So we're talking to Andrew Doan. We'll be back in just a second on Real Recovery. Thanks. All is well. George, there's Cinnamon Girl, so you know what that means. We're down to our last segment.
Love this song, Bill.
I do, too. We're talking to Dr. Andrew Doan. He has written an incredible book. Lots of honesty in this book. Lots of things to learn. You know, Andy, I want to ask you about all the screen time kids are using nowadays. If you're at a family dinner and there's a, you know, somebody who's a younger on a screen, how much of that should we pay attention to, and how much of it is, well, they're just bored being around adults?
It's huge. And so, you know, we only become better at things we practice. So we don't practice self-control and self-regulation and even imagination or communication skills. We lose it. So I want the listeners to hold up their hand. Okay, they have their thumb and the other four fingers. Imagine the thumb or all the benefits of gaming, which is the hand-eye coordination, the impulsivity, the quick, you know, decision-making skills. There are definitely good things to video games. I'm not anti-video games. And that means if you play 30 to 60 minutes a day only, you will gain those benefits of healthy games with healthy content. So content matters too. So that represents by your thumb.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say the second finger is represented by emotional stability. The third one is self-regulation and self-control. The fourth finger there, the ring finger, is, let's say, you know, relationship with other people. And the last one is, say, communication. Now, those other four fingers can be anything in behaviors. But as you spend more hours, and the average child now, based on the Kaiser Foundation research in 2010, the average child is using 7 hours and 38 minutes a day. That's sevenfold more than what's recommended in the medical research on healthy gaming and screen time. So now the other areas of the brain atrophy. We know this by medical research. So what happens is, now fold the other four fingers into your fist. What happens is the thumb becomes the overriding area of the brain. When they grow up into an adult, they are merely all thumb in their thinking. ADHD-like, impulsive, only want quick reward, can't have self-control, can't communicate well with people, don't have a very good relationship with their family and friends, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
So how as a parent do you have any kind of influence? I mean, what's the best way of regulating that behavior without making it look so punitive?
Sure. So one thing you can do as parents is regulate by setting healthy boundaries. So you can say, well, it's only healthy – you know, like you see other adults drink one glass of wine, you know, every day because they're you know, for heart and cardiovascular health. That means, you know, we only play 1 hour or less a day. So we do that as a family. So play with your kids, okay? So if you think gaming is important in your family, pull out the Wii and the Xbox and play with them. See what they're doing in the games. Talk to them, engage in them. That's the best thing you can do. And then also educate the child and say, listen, if you're playing an hour a day but you still – if your thought processes are all engulfed in the gaming, perhaps that's not the best thing for you. And so, you know, based on addiction research, that could mean that you could be a gaming addict. And maybe abstinence is best because, you know, you have better things in your life to look forward to. So it starts with educating, you know, parents about the signs and symptoms of addiction, as well as setting healthy boundaries to use this activity as being, you know, as a healthy, beneficial activity.
Now, you said you just quit cold turkey. What did you do after that, or did you just stop and good to go?
You know, I was a mess. I taught myself web design. And so for the University of Iowa, I created this website called iRounds. And I literally transferred all my time not sleeping into creating this website where I published, you know, case reports for the university. And then I was able to learn search engine optimization on the side. And so I got all excited about how I was able to get these pages on Google, on the first page of Google for the university. And my department chair rewarded me. The American Academy of Ophthalmology was amazed, so they invited me in. So I got sucked into, like, working harder, and people are patting me on the head as a reward. So in a way, I became addicted to work. but I was still a mess. And so here's the evidence of a mess. So the Christmas after I quit gaming, I was building these websites and building all these, business kind of things and emailing tons of people around the country. And I felt so important that, the chief executive officer of the American Academy of Ophthalmology was, communicating with me, and I was only a resident. And so it was Christmas morning, and the kids are opening up the presents. And the video, I was like just horrified when I watched it again. I was completely buried down into the screen, not looking up at all. And literally not even, my son would hand me a present to open for him, and I would hand it back to him. And literally everyone was opening presents and, and enjoying each other. And here I am still dove deep into my computer. Now, keep in mind, I am a Christian at this point. I'm born again, accepted Christ. And so what I tell people, listen, if you're in 10 years of addiction, prepare for 10 years of recovery. Often it says you're 10 years in the forest, it takes 10 years to walk out of it. And I've lived that.
How did you walk out?
Excuse me?
How did you walk out of your forest?
I dove into the scriptures more. So finally, I dove into the scriptures and learned how to be a man, learned how to be a husband, learned how to moderate, and learned how to live a life that the Lord wanted me. And so when I read the passage of Matthew, if you're thinking lustfully or if you're thinking about anger or hating your neighbors, you've already committed adultery or murder. And so I'm like, wow, so I got to start practicing not doing that. And so when I read about, living a life in Christ, I started applying it. And that's really what changed my life. And so 10 years later, after I stopped in 2004 gaming, my sleep processes now are returned. I can now sleep 7-8 hours a night without getting up in the middle of the night and being a mess. And then also diving into my family. So I learned to love my wife like Christ loved the church. And so that was now my focus. And that has done wonders for our marriage. And by the grace of God, we are now married 18 years. And my words of encouragement for those who are listening with addictions, listen, recovery is only the first step. Then after that, you got to repair all the potholes and all the damage of years and years of abuse on everyone else that dealt with your addiction. But you can do it, though, with the Lord. With the Lord, everything can be repaired.
Well, it sounds that there is an element to gaming, which is not too far away from some of the chemicals like cocaine or meth that fire in your brain. It sounds like it's a pretty serious territory to be in.
Yes. And so let me describe to you a scenario that will help the listeners to understand this. So at the University of Washington, there's a research group that uses virtual reality gaming called Snow World to control pain in burn victims. So when these virtual reality glasses are placed on, it's kind of like the Oculus Rift that is now being marketed by Facebook and other developers. These virtual reality glasses allowed the burn victim to play this game where they throw snowballs at penguins and snowmen in this game. But because of the neuroendocrine arousal and the visual distraction that's associated with gaming, the nurses now can scrub their burns and change their burn bandages every day for burn treatment. It's an anesthetic. And not only is it an anesthetic, it's also a stimulant. And so now we're seeing people being stimulated by this because testosterone's up, adrenaline's up, as well as endorphins in the brain. So now they get this pain-killing aspect of it, but they also get the stimulant aspect of it and keeps them up all night.
That is so interesting.
It is.
My goodness.
It's way beyond me how that would work, but obviously it does.
But obviously we want to always be changing the way we feel. We're always looking for things to distract us. And I think the bigger question is, why are we so obsessed with that? Maybe we're not following in our faith or spending as much time in the Word as we should be.
Well, I think it's tough, too. We read the Word, and until you act on it, it's not that exciting. At least that has been my experience. So how did you act out what you read, Doctor?
Thanks for asking me that, because me being an academic, I'm very data-driven, right? So I don't just dive into a religion. I used to make fun of Christians. I mean, I beat up a Christian kid when I was in ninth grade and almost killed him, and I described that event in my book. So for me, I'm very methodical and analytical. So when I took a passage and I applied it to my life, and it worked. I'm like, wow, this really works. So I got a dopamine rush, and that's success. So then I read more scriptures, and I use it as a life instruction manual.
I love it.
And so eventually then I read through it because I didn't have this Christian upbringing. You know, my parents were Buddhists, and they were superstitious, and they prayed to the dead, and they, you know, invited these, like, you know, the enemy into our house. And so I didn't have the foundations that I needed. So I used this life manual called the Bible, and my life changed. I saw fruit start bearing in my life. So it may be just a fledgling little tree with a, you know, ugly fruit at first, but I'm like, wow, this is fruit. This is more fruit than I had ever, right? Mm. At least I had one little fruit here that's all, you know, wrinkled up, and but it's still fruit. And so I just started to devour the word and apply it to my life, and then my relationships improved and my life improved. And man, you're talking about dopamine rush. When you see something, data points like that work, it was like rush big time.
Yeah,
and sustainable.
Andy, this has been such a fascinating hour. We so appreciate you coming on the show and sharing with so much honesty and candidness. This is a serious deal, and I think parents need to pay attention as to what they're doing and what they're letting their kids do. And it's not to be messed with. So we appreciate you being a guest on the show today. And thank you very much for joining us tonight on Real Recovery. We hope you learned something and grew in your faith. And we hope you have a great, great week. Good night, everybody. God bless.
Hi, I'm Bill Arnold with George Fraser.
Hi, Bill.
Thanks for checking out this podcast of Real Recovery. You can hear the show live Sundays at 5 p.m. This, as well as many other podcasts, are available to listen to while you take a walk or do whatever you want to do. The address is myfaithradio.com. Thanks for listening.